The Alabama Crops Report Podcast, your trusted information source for Alabama agriculture.
Hey, everybody. Welcome in to another episode of the Alabama Crops Report Podcast. Simmer, we've got a big group in here today.
Yeah, this is probably our biggest group so far.
Hopefully, maybe our biggest group we ever have.
This is on the podcast.
So we are live from the Alpha Building, the real Alpha Building, not the one on main campus at Auburn, but the one in Montgomery, with our Auburn TAPS program. So we're going to talk about that. We've got a lot of farmers that participated in it and other folks at Auburn that helped kind of drive this. A really neat deal. So I don't know exactly how this is going to go, again, with this many people, but we're going to try to have a conversation and talk about the TAPS, what we learned, what it is, what we learned, and then, kind of moving into next year, what we're going
to
do.
Yeah, absolutely. And to kind of kick us off, if either Brenda or Adam, one of y'all want to very quickly, briefly share information on what is the TAPS program with our audience.
So thanks, everyone. I'm Brenda Ortiz, professor in the Crop, Soil, and Environmental Sciences Department. So TAPS, T-A-P-S, stands for Testing Agricultural Performance Solutions. But the goal of the project is to test crop management practices and use novel technology and solutions to improve profitability and environmental sustainability. So we invited this year 8 teams of farmers and consultants to really farm a corn crop at the E.V. Smith Research and Extension Center. And these teams made decisions prior to planting and during the growing season. So we are excited. We have some of the TAPS teams with us here and some of the members of the program as well.
All right, thank you. So like as Brenda said, we got a few of the participants here, so I'll probably get you in, Drew. So I guess, do you want to just briefly share, your participation in the program and also maybe some of the things that you, well, my question would be, why'd you decide to get involved?
I decided to get involved largely to see what Jeremy was doing. They haven't told us what team he was on yet, but I'm still working him over. But in reality, I do think that it's important to see what other farmers are doing and where they're having their success. And it also gives us the opportunity to maybe tweak some plans that we like my production plan was based on the way that I grow corn on my farm, but also it allowed me to make a few changes and kind of experiment on a place that's not really my own as well.
Drew, we always kind of joke, but it's true, that probably the biggest benefit of our county meetings that we do is for farmers to have the opportunity to talk in the back of the room and share ideas, share stuff that they're doing. And, hopefully what we're presenting helps, but a lot of it's there. And that's really what this has been an opportunity for y'all to do, to actually see it and compare it. So I think it's been a really cool experience.
Yeah. Jeremy, you want to share some of
Not all your secrets.
That's right. I can't share all the secrets. But like Drew said, it just kind of getting to watch what other people are doing, making decisions, and seeing that they actually – do make a difference versus what the next person was doing in the same field. Because you can talk about what you did on different fields, but sometimes that doesn't translate into real life. But this was actually looking at something side by side, and when we made different decisions, how it affected the crop. And so it was very interesting to see.
And something else, if I may, is when we do our research plots, we have a check plot, which is if we didn't do any of these things, this is what would happen. Sometimes you're not going to do that in your own farm, obviously, right? You're not just going to leave out 10 acres and just say, well, let's see what happens. But in this, you actually did have a check plot where nothing happened, or relatively nothing happened, where you could actually see, hey, yeah, this is what these decisions did. And so that's probably nice as well to be able to see that.
Drew, I kind of want to follow up on you. You mentioned it's not just you made decisions on how you used – you do it on your farm, right? And even Jeremy, for you, I guess, after participating in this, I guess the whole goal of the program is learn, right, different management practices and maybe take it back and us sharing with other growers. Would you guys, I feel like, learn anything that may have changed some of your decisions or you think has the potential to change in 2025 on your own farms? Or we're not there yet, and you can be completely honest, you know.
I'm not looking to change a lot of things yet. I still think to make a good decision that I'd like to see a little more information about some of the background stuff that's not really a result of what we decided but may have had an effect on it too before I would change a lot of things. But it was interesting to see that the way the timing of the nitrogen applications affected the final outcome. If you're already doing it three times, you might want to look at where you put what timing you put the majority of it out at.
And I also think, you know, this year, when you talk about timing, that can change from year to year because this year was a dry year. And so maybe it didn't need the nitrogen late because you didn't lose what you'd put out early. And if you had gotten a big rain, maybe you lost it. And this year, I don't think you can make too many decisions off of one year. But one thing that I've been noticing over the last several years, and Dr. Ortiz has really done a lot of work with irrigation, and I actually don't use sensors on my farm right now, but I have seen what sensors are showing in the crops, and over-irrigating is actually hurting us more than under-irrigating. Mm-hmm. So if you had, you know, if you're looking at borderline, I used to not think you could over-irrigate when it got hot, and now I'm realizing that you can, that you're actually hurting that crop. So that's one thing that we've kind of implemented into our farm, and it kind of showed in this, in these plots also. So that's one thing that I will take away.
Yeah, no, that's a great point, because I think one of the main goals is testing performance of different technologies and management practices, right? Mm-hmm. And from the data, if you feel like, hey, we may be over irrigating and I think we can find a benefit from using soil moisture sensors to cut back on our irrigation, you know, that's kind of a good lesson from there that could also be applicable to other audience or growers.
That's right. And you know, we've got our two of our economists at the table as well, and one thing that I think we kind of learned, or we already knew but confirmed through this, is with bad prices there's two ways to make money: make the most yield you can, or our check plots made money too with basically doing nothing. So either put the least amount you can into it and just get what you can, or try to make the most of whatever your commodity is.
Scott, the thing out of this program that really kind of struck me is the fact that there was such variation amongst the teams in terms of the decisions that they made. But then when we start putting those costs to it and figure out what those net returns are, opportunities for making some money, were definitely there that wasn't just tied to yield. We can start talking about the use of crop insurance. While there were no indemnities that any of the teams received in that, it does show that, you know, that there's some protection there, and, you know, it contributes a little bit to that input cost. But, you know, when it's combined with marketing strategies and marketing plans, which Wendy can talk a bit about, there's opportunities to make even more money. Mm-hmm. But controlling those costs of those inputs, in terms of input efficiency, and then ultimately minimizing your costs, can ultimately affect your profitability and make for a better outcome.
Yeah, no, definitely. That I think that's a great point. Adam, we kind of want to bring you in. You officially didn't participate in the program, but you've been kind of very involved with Extension and Auburn University, hosted a bunch of on-farm trials over the years at your farm too, right? What do you see, do you find value out of this today by attending or even learning about the program, or how do you kind of?
Absolutely, there's a huge amount of value. So this is where I think the most value comes from. Like, there's an infinite amount of decisions that can be made on the farm. And what you have in TAPS is allowing six or seven farmers and their lifetime experiences to make decisions on each part of this, and then we get to compare it in the real numbers. You know, it's not just one year. We're really tapping in from their lifetime experience of farming to add value to. So, you know, it's kind of a cheat to see, and it was, eye-opening on for me, it's got to control cost because of the value added or the, you know, money that can be put back in your operation, it was eye-opening. So I know it's just 1 year's of data that we see here, but, you know, hopefully this program lasts a long time. We're going to see it over, you know, decades maybe.
Yeah. So. I think that's the plan, Brenda. Is that right? We want to keep it going.
Yeah, we want to keep it going and not only focus on corn management, but perhaps peanut. And I think that there is a lot of interest on a peanut crop and how this type of projects can impact peanut production and, of course, the profitability and bottom line for the peanut producers as well.
So I think I just want to add that, you know, for next year, we are looking at some of those other opportunities and, you know, implementing an online platform for those decision making will make that a little easier, but also the marketing side of things, right? So, Wendy, why don't you speak a little bit about the marketing plans, because that's going to be something that are going to be some good options for education and then seeing what kind of results from that.
Yeah, so on the marketing side, this year all teams marketed their corn at harvest. And, you know, typically I'd say 8 out of 10 years, we've seen that prices the first half of the year are higher than at harvest and that later half of the year. So there was some opportunity for some improvement by marketing pre-harvest. And so two of the strategies that teams are able to use are just forward contracting or hedge to arrive contracts. And so overall teams could have improved their prices by about 50 cents to 80 cents by having those marketing plans there. And so in the future, you know, that's one way when we're talking about increasing revenues with yields, there's always that trade-off where, you know, a lot of times you increase yield, you're increasing costs. So you really have to balance it out. But on the marketing side, there's an opportunity to increase revenues without really adding those costs there. So that's something we can take advantage of.
And we've already heard some feedback from participants this year that have said, hey, I don't do that. This is something I need to start learning and start thinking about.
Drew and Jeremy, I guess, kind of along the same lines. This was obviously the first year. There was a lot of learning and everything, right? What would be, I hope you guys would continue to participate, and maybe Adam was voluntarily just said he will be involved too. Learning from this year, are there other management decisions, inputs, and all that you kind of want to maybe see as a part of that could help you, but even other growers across the state, you know, that may not have been a part of this year's?
The main benefit of doing this with the university is the amount of resources and technology that they have as far as your areas of expertise, and then also the way that we can analyze data and that everybody's looking at it from a different angle. Naturally, Scott would say maybe we should consider some sort of insecticide management approach because he that's his area of expertise, and he thinks that, you know, that's an area we could do better. And then the ways that we can analyze the results that we got as what, you know, whether we can find other correlations that are outside of the decisions that we make, or we can correlate similar decisions between growers like they're already working to do. I think that that's going to show some value. Like, hey, it looks like 8 out of 10 people who decided to go right instead of left, you know, were better because of it. And I think that doing those kind of things can give you some mathematical support for a decision and kind of help eliminate some of the bias that we have, because I think that all of us as producers are biased toward or by what our experience has been in farming and may even be biased from year to year, coming off a bad year, coming off a good year, how that affects what you look at next year. But if you have some statistics that say, hey, you know, 7 out of 10 times this is the right thing to do, I think that that's what I'd like to see, and what I look forward to kind of seeing is how different people can move towards the same goal of like efficiency and profitability, but not all on the same path.
Yeah, kind of along those same lines, one thing, and I don't mean this to sound bad in any way when I say this, but sometimes when Extension does good work, but when you look at what Extension does and they make the decisions on what to do, then you think, well, if I'd have done it, I would have done it differently, or if it had been done this way, it would have been done right. Well, now I'm the one making the decisions. Drew's the one making the decisions. And it's on a scale where you can see, you can compare it. to our two decisions as to what we did. And Extension is handling that, and that's the only way that you can do that to make it. And I think, though, when the farmer actually makes the decision, then we actually believe, you know, in what we see. And so I think that kind of helps. And even when people go and look at this later, other farmers look at this and they see that farmers are making those decisions, I think it brings more, it adds more weight to the
more credibility. Yeah, and it also kind of goes along with, we said the same thing about on-farm research versus a small plot or something, right?
Yeah.
It's done in an actual environment in a grower with the grower's equipment, technology, everything. And here, I like what you said. If I was making a decision, well, I would have made it different. But this time, you made the decision, right? So
right.
That's a very valid point.
And so, Eros, this year we were, due to, space, Extension didn't have a team. But next year, I hope we do have a team. And as an unofficial member of the corn team, I wish you all the best in beating the farmers.
Yeah, absolutely. We did struggle with space availability this year. We wish we could have like 20 teams participating, and we had to fit 8 teams. We did have space for 8 teams, but then we figured out that we needed a control, in order to calculate all the indices that we wanted to calculate. So we stepped down and we decided to leave the plots for a check. So next year we're gonna work better on having everyone participating plus an extension specialist team, not because we want to beat the farmers, and that's not gonna be the case, but the thing is just to compare what the university recommendations are to what's going on in the real world, right? So I think that's going to be interesting from this point of view as well.
It's something we don't get to do a lot as scientists is look at the whole big picture, right? We're looking for how does water efficiency impact yield, and so everything is controlled but that one factor. And what we learn a lot when we do talk with farmers or go out and see in the real world is sometimes these other things affect it, and maybe what we thought ain't exactly right in every situation because of all these other factors. And now having this where we can look at all of our recommendations for all, you know, 20 different things, maybe we will say, oh, we need to tweak that a little bit. That didn't quite fit like we thought it would. So, I mean, we're going to learn stuff about our own recommendations too.
Oh, absolutely. I think the beauty of the project is we can change some of the decisions, but we need to have a standard protocol for most of the management practices, right? But in evaluating the decisions that were made, we had some changes, variability, and the outcome was different. So I think everyone could see the results and say, okay, maybe I have something to learn from this experience. And I think that's valuable for everyone involved.
When you get married on a Saturday and on the following Saturday your husband is with you in the field, you know, that means a lot. So I agree with what you just said, Scott and Seymour. This type of projects would not happen without the collaboration of the people from the research stations. I think that we all were learning by doing this year. But I think that what this project proves is that when we work as a team, including the farmers, we can reach much farther. And I think that's what the real goal of this project is. It's a true collaboration between the farmers, the university extension, and the private industry. So, and that's the reason why all these stakeholders were here at Alpha. You know, they are interested in this project, they are interested on the learnings from this first year, but also they are ready to support this project for next year. And I really would like to thank also the leadership of Carla Hornady, representing the Alabama Farmers Federation today, and also supporting this project and this effort. Why are you so committed to this project, Carla?
Well, Brenda brought this before the wheat and feed grains, and I think just that committee thought that it was exciting. You know, we're currently in some tough times on the farm, and I think learning more about what others are doing and putting maybe their timing against your timing of applications or your seed choice against someone else's, just to see in these difficult times, can you save some money by, you know, doing something different and timing applications different or the amount of, you know, applications different. And so, you know, that's my job, is whatever the committee's excited about to be excited about and make sure that it's a success. And we had a great group in the auditorium today to hear the results. And so I think that just shows the interest that people across the state have and that the farmers have. And I do think that, you know, there is a lot to learn from this.
Yeah, no, thanks Carla and Alpha for all the support and everything. And hopefully, you know, we'll see more and more participation from the growers, but also from the extension team, you know, and even, you know, trying to include some other crops in it, like you all said. I guess going along the same lines, I know Aris made a good point. Scott and I were also talking. It would be great to have our extension agents as a team in a way, because end of the day, they reach out to us for recommendations or we're growers, and I'm like, how would they approach this, right? So that would be good to put there, because it's a learning process for everybody too, right? Other thing, I guess, you know, we always talk about irrigation versus dry land. I think I'm curious as to, if this was a dry land situation, how would have your management decisions changed? Would drastically not, or how would you have made it very differently?
And try not to use hindsight.
No, just when it comes to our farm, the main thing that we do different is just lower the nitrogen rates, because your estimated yield in Alabama can range big time. You know, there's a big change. So, you know, I think if we were at like 270 units of nitrogen is what we put out, if I'm on dry land, 200 is going to be a maximum for me. And that's according to what, you know, what soil type, you know, mm-hmm. if it's good ground or bad ground, but 200 is, I'm just not going to put much more than that and risk it on dry land. So that would be my main difference if it was a dry land.
I think I agree with that. I would adjust nitrogen rates. I typically try to put less money at risk on dry land acres, so I probably would have my total cost pulled back around $200 to $250 an acre. I'm just shooting from the hip here, but like I'd pull it back significantly mm-hmm. To have less exposure to that seasonal risk, and that would go all the way back to even the variety choice. Mm-hmm. I might be planting just some acres I'll plant just straight Roundup Ready. You know, I'll go with older technology, not get the 3-gene. You know, it, from starting from the seed all the way forward, I might find cheaper products to move in the same direction, but with kind of a lower top end goal.
Yeah. You know, I don't know if y'all have looked at the variety trial website much this year yet, but Henry Jordan, who runs our OVTs, said that at Belmonte this year, the dry land corn was right at, the trial average is right at 100 bushels an acre. The irrigated, which got 6 inches of water, is all it got, 250 bushels. And so that just shows exactly what y'all are saying of you can't put the same upfront resources knowing you're not going to have that yield potential.
And one thing, if I was really trying to push my dry land, what you're talking about Drew, about cutting down on pulling that number back, the dollars per acre, is I'm in this trial with the irrigated, I put all my nitrogen out by B6. I might not have done that. I might have put out to where I want to be, but then later in the year, if I'm continuing to get rain, I might add some nitrogen to that later to, you know, because you realize what you can make instead of putting it all out up front and, you know, hoping. Yep. Because you can waste a lot doing that.
Yeah. Yeah, farming is, I'm not a farmer, but I see it a lot like life. You just make the best decision you can with what you know now, mm-hmm. and then that gets you the next week or the next decision, and sometimes you look back and think, man, I could have done this, but you didn't know what was going to happen at the time. Mm-hmm. You're just operating with what you know.
Yeah. you think adding, and that's just me being curious, adding a dry land situation in this in the future would help? Because, granted, we always talk about only, 10-15% of our state is irrigated. That would have a bigger impact on the growers who are actually in a lot of dry land situations.
The problem with that is there's so many variables, and that's what irrigation takes those variables out. Okay. So, I mean, yes, I think it would be good, but also I don't know, that would take a long time to actually learn something from that, because it would change from year to year, and the timing of that rain, if it was 1 week later or 1 week earlier, could have made a huge difference in that crop. So I think the irrigation takes so many variables out that that's the way you actually learn something to take.
On the same note, I do think that, like, you could take the framework of, like, how we're making these decisions, and we have different producers doing the same thing, and if I could maybe understand where Jeremy's head's at when he's when he's growing a dry land crop, and when he is on his, we're looking at his second nitrogen application with no rain in sight, and, you know, if you could understand the reasons why somebody makes those decisions, right, it could help you make your own decision, but just, you know, get a consensus. I'm really guilty of that. I usually call three or four people, and they all know who they are, and and they'll tell me, well, I know so-and-so is going to say this, but this is what I would do. And then at the end of the day, I might take one of their advice, but I might just hear them all and then do what I want to do anyway. Yeah. So I don't know. I think understanding how people come to different conclusions is just as important as what happens after you make the decision.
I have a question, perhaps for Jeremy and Adam Temple. So if we want to replicate this project in one of the two major row crops in Alabama, either cotton or peanut, which one you will pick and why?
Cotton, because I don't grow peanuts.
I was going to say peanuts because I don't grow cotton.
Scott, do you want to jump in today?
But from like a statistical, whatever you know has the most acreage, which I would say cotton, would probably, you have to look out for the greatest benefit. Well, maybe I want peanuts added, but greatest benefit for the state.
As the known person who is the most biased towards cotton, probably in extension, I say peanuts. Because cotton is such a reactive crop. If they have the option of 10 different varieties, and then they all need to be picked differently, they have different maturities, so they should be picked differently, that just really complicates it. Where peanuts, it's kind of like corn in that you pretty well know when you plant it when different inputs are going out for the most part. It's much less reactive. It's more proactive. So I just think logistically it would be more doable.
Yeah.
I think there's another side that we can look at with this too. If we want to get real ambitious, we can think about rotation.
If we add peanuts, I really, really would like to add the harvest decision as an option, because lately I have noticed the impact that, you know, early harvest has on the final yield. I mean, it's tremendous, and I think there is still a lot of room for improvement when it comes to harvest decisions. And again, there is a lot of opportunities ahead of us. We just need some funding, Carla.
For peanuts, you're going to have to talk to Libby.
It would be very interesting on peanuts to see, like, the high input environment and a low input environment, and see which one wins out economically over, you know, a period of time.
Yeah, see, I was thinking about that when the results were presented in a way, and I've seen some researchers do that in cotton, I guess in Tifton maybe, in a way where they do I think we had this discussion in our crops meeting of low input management, right, where it's like you're trying to make most money by reducing or cutting down on everything, and then one in the middle would be a moderate, where you spend the money on where you find value the most, but then cut down other, and then the high would be where you spend money to make money, right? So, like, comparing those three strategies against each other to kind of see which one, you know, fares out, because I know there could be differing opinions on how you want to be profitable, right?
The one thing, I've never grown peanuts, so I can't answer to this, but I know, talking to people that have grown them, It's a lot of work to do either one of them. It takes a lot of time and a lot of different applications and different things. And the issue with cotton, one thing you were talking about, is it, to me, I go on feel and sight a lot of times mm-hmm. on a lot of things you do with cotton. So that would be a difficult mm-hmm. side of that to do that. But it would be very interesting to see, especially if you had the same variety across the field, the way people handled it differently and how it affected yield yeah. as the year went. It would be very interesting yeah, to see.
And I can tell you, as somebody who lives in Auburn and raises cotton in on the Tennessee line, basically, and in the ocean, the Gulf, it's very difficult to stay on top of managing it that far mm-hmm. away, and you're not touching it and seeing it all the time. And then you miss plant bugs for a week, and there goes that whole week of fruiting, and that delays maturity. So it would be difficult. I'd love to do it, but it would be difficult. Well, we appreciate y'all's time. Anything else we need to cover, or any other points? This has been great. Brenda, again, thank you for leading this and bringing this to Auburn. Do you want to tell people who might want to be involved next year how to get in touch or how to go about that?
Yes. Before we leave, I think that what this year demonstrates is the value of teamwork. I want to repeat this. We have the grain crops extension agronomists, two ag economists, ag engineers, the colleagues at the ag experiment station, the farmers with all the knowledge, the support from industry. I think that's the real value of this project, because we all are pursuing the same goal, which is helping our farmers. So we are excited for next year. Next year, the teams will have access to the national TAPS platform, where they can directly choose among the choices that are given to them prior or during the growing season. So that's great. Anybody interested in TAPS can get in touch with Dr. Eros Francisco, Dr. Adam Rabinowitz, Dr. Wendian, or myself, or at the E.V. Smith Research and Extension Center with Andrew Sparks. So, again, thanks to all the teams and the Ag Experiment Station for the support, as well as Alpha. And we are looking forward to start the new year with perhaps the same teams or different teams. We don't know, but we are excited. Thank you so much.
Brenda, to the kind of follow up on for the next year, but if people listening to this and they're interested more in, hey, I want to see some of the results or the yields or different, where can they find that information?
Yeah, so the report that we distributed today will be available either on the Extension website or in my website. In the upcoming week, we are going to make the report available online. And then we will use social media, either the Precision Agriculture Facebook page or our Precision Agriculture Twitter account or our Alabama Crops Facebook page. We will announce and share the information of where the report will be placed. But definitely the report is ready and it can be available to anyone that is interested in learning about this project and perhaps joining either if not as a direct participant. There are a lot of learnings that are happening from this project and during the execution of the project.
All right. Well, as always, we appreciate the listeners for joining in with us. And if anybody has any topics or ideas or things that we should talk about, please let us know. And as always, if any of us here with Alabama Extension can do anything to help, please don't hesitate to reach out.
The Alabama Crops Report is a production of the Alabama Cooperative Extension System.